affiliates. Head on with Bob Kincaid in 1 minute. Mark. Affiliates, head on with Bob Kincaid in 30 seconds. Mark.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, and good evening. It is Wednesday night. It's the last day of November. This is Head On. You know that. And, of course, well, being Wednesday night, yeah, you know what that means. It's, it's prayer meeting night here at Head On. That's what Wednesdays are for. Prayer meeting night, and we got a little bit of religious fun for you this evening, as we always do on prayer meeting night. But more than anything else, we had a speech from Dear Leader today that we're going to have to talk about. So, you know, just think of it this way: I listen to Bush, so you won't have to. We can. It was 45 minutes of blather. In essence, well, I have the most relevant part of the speech right here for you. This is the very essence of Dear Leader's speech today.
Please be seated. Thanks for the warm welcome.
Yeah, nice to see Gazer allowed in the military.
Good to be back at the Naval Academy.
We love you, George.
Pleased to provide a convenient excuse for you to miss class. September the 11th. 2001. September the 11th, 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 2001.
You get
September
the idea.
September the 11th, 2001.
How September that man 11th, can sit there and, I mean, this was, for George September Bush, this 11th, was a Castro-length September speech, 11th, 45 minutes of absolute unmitigated 11th, idiotic yammering.
2001. September the 11th.
Yeah, we get it, George. You know, that business at the, yeah, we love you, George! Yeah, well, you know, don't ask, don't tell, you know? So, it was all about announcing the new, bring that up just so I can see the official title. Bring up the web browser real quick, please. And over there, the far tab. Yeah, National Strategy for Victory. Keep going. Roll through it, dear. National Strategy for Victory in Iraq. National Security Council, November 2005. And it's in PDF format. You can go all over the place and read it. It's it looks like, frankly, it looks like something a seventh grader would turn in as a book report. Not terribly inspiring. But yeah, it was 49 seconds into the speech before George managed to mention September the 11th, 2001. And he did it repeatedly through the speech. It was the same old stupid shtick. It was, I made notes, and rather than go to the trouble, I like to have sound bites, but my God, cutting sound on George Bush is like cutting your teeth on aluminum foil. So, about 5 minutes and 38 seconds in, he said, "We have a clear strategy," and then began reading from the book report. And now they've come up with a new word, rejectionists. The people who are fighting us fall into three classes. Rejectionists, Saddamists, and outside tourists. So now the people who don't like being... because remember, Rummy yesterday said, "Now we can't call them insurgents anymore. I think that's too dignified for them." And General Peter Pace, the new Joint Chiefs commander, had real troubles time after time after time. He kept calling them insurgents. And then that's what we've trained. Hell, they're not insurgents. Call them what they are. You know, the French, in World War II, the French underground was referred to by the Germans as insurgents or terrorists. We on this side of the aisle and this side of the fight called them the resistance. That's what they mean by rejectionists. Rejectionists. They're people who... it's a pretty way of saying they are people who reject the presence of the United States in Iraq. People who want their own country back. And... later on, about 7 minutes and 45 seconds into the speech, the dear leader said that the rejectionists lack democratic support. And the tourists and the Saddamists lack democratic support. And I find that incredibly interesting because, well, you listen to this show, so therefore you know that the report came out with Iraqi government approval last week from the conference in Cairo, where they agreed the terrorism has to stop, the blowing up children has to stop, killing innocent Iraqi civilians has to stop. These were the Sunnis, the Kurds, and the Shia all agreeing on one thing, which is, you know, a little miracle in itself. And of course, you remember that the one thing that was not contained in that list was blowing up American soldiers. Nope, that's okay. That's okay with the Iraqi government. That's okay with the Iraqi people. They lack democratic support. It was 8 minutes and 45 seconds into the speech the first time he... And there's another little miracle. He mentioned Osama bin Laden. Now, bear in mind, he more or less said that Osama was an Iraqi, but at least he mentioned him. Osama been mostly forgotten. 9 minutes and 5 seconds in, and he's telling us that Iraq will attack America if we don't stay there and get more people killed and more troops over the cliff. Iraq will attack America. He said it. 9 minutes and 15 seconds, he said that Iraq wants to invade Spain. No kidding. An Islamist empire that stretches from Afghanistan to Spain. Read that. I just made the notes. 9 minutes 15 seconds. Iraq wants to invade Spain. Apparently, someone showed W a 1,000-year-old map of the old Muslim caliphate, and he thought it was current or modern or something. Let's see. Second mention of 9/11. 10 minutes and 18 seconds in. 11 minutes and 12 seconds in, he was quoting from the movie Galaxy Quest. You remember, "Never give up, never surrender." And, 12:04, he told us all to go read his book report. 13 minutes and 50 seconds in, he was telling us about supportive regional states. You know, like the one he visited last week, the city of Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. The Mongolian government, you'll recall, joined the coalition of the billing by contributing, that's right, $160. Not $160,000, not $1.6 million, $160 we got from the Mongolians for the war on terror. You know, I guess we were, with that $160, we were able to buy little red hats and jackets to equip the monkeys. Really, honest to God, the monkeys that Morocco sent. I don't know if we got any money for the organ grinders. Jeez. So it on and on and on. 45 tiresome minutes. 14 minutes and 49 seconds in, his slurring caught up with him, and he said he was trying to say cities, and he wound up saying a word that I can't say on the air. Is it the Valium? Is it Klonopin? Is it some antidepressant? Is it, what is he on? Librium? Laudanum? Who knows, but yeah, he was slurring a little bit today. And 19 minutes and 55 seconds in, he told an outright honking lie. He said, coalition forces can focus on training Iraqis. Because, well, you listen to this show, so you know who's training the Iraqis. You remember Colonel Ted Westhusing, who blew his brains out because he was an honorable man and he saw the manifest sickness and dishonor in the corporate greed-ridden filth that is the Iraqi procurement process and the Iraqi sellout of the American military. The American soldiers aren't training the Iraqi forces. They're being trained by personnel from USIS under a contract for some $68 million that you and I are paying for and that Colonel Ted Westhusing found out about and was managing, and became disgusted with, and full of despair, and killed himself over. 23 minutes and 10 seconds in, and it became kind of interesting. We're getting 3,500 Iraqis every 6 weeks. New Iraqi police. 3,500 new Iraqi police. Every 6 weeks, 35... Do the math. How many weeks before everybody in Iraq is a policeman? You have to listen critically to this clown. Because the lies fly under the radar. Yeah, he's a liar. It's what he does. Why should we be surprised? Let's take a break. We'll come back. Your phone calls, of course, are always welcome. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob. This is Head On. Don't start the talking.
Once upon a time in a small cottage lived a boy named Chuck. One day, Chuck heard a knock from inside the wall.
Who is it?
He cried, for Chuck cried rather easily.
It is I, the energy hog, over here,
said a voice. Now, an energy hog is what you have when people waste energy. Chuck ran to tell his family.
There's a hog in our house!
Exclaimed Chuck.
That's no way to talk about your Aunt Melba,
said his mother, and sent him to his room.
That does it,
said Chuck. He raced to his computer and logged on to energyhog.org.
I'll just have to get rid of it myself.
At energyhog.org, Chuck played cool games and learned to use energy wisely. He learned that by switching to better light bulbs, he had the power to rid the cottage of the evil energy hog forever.
I'm leaving, but I shall return,
vowed the hog.
Don't count on it, bacon breath,
vowed Chuck. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org, or a switch in time, save swine.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
November is National Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Lung cancer is the nation's leading cause of cancer death, killing more than breast, prostate, colon, and skin cancer combined. Early detection of lung cancer, when it's most treatable, is key to survival. New screening methods such as CAT scans are being used in clinical trials. Learn your risk and the symptoms of lung cancer. Smoking is the major risk, but you can develop lung cancer even if you don't smoke. Coughing, wheezing, and fatigue are just a few of the symptoms that are often confused with less serious conditions. Treatment may include surgery, radiation treatments, chemotherapy, or one of several interventional radiology procedures. Discuss treatment options with your doctor. For more information on lung cancer risk, symptoms, detection, and treatment, visit www.radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org. This health reminder from the Radiological Society of North America.
Tornadoes have been reported in several neighboring states.
Small business owner Jonathan Harlan of Jackson, Tennessee.
Living in Tornado Alley, you kind of get used to dealing with them. You just pray one doesn't hit your area. Late Sunday night, just before midnight, an F4 Twister touched down in Jackson, leveling our downtown. There was nothing left of our building, just piles of bricks and concrete. We lost everything. Fortunately, backup systems were in place. Employees knew what to do and worked from other locations. Because we were prepared, our clients never knew the difference.
Whether it's a natural disaster or terrorist attack, every business needs an emergency plan. A plan can save lives, company assets, and your entire business at little or no cost to your company. You can't control what happens, but you can be prepared. Visit www.ready.gov today. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Forgot about that Georgie reference. 21 minutes after the hour, this is Head On. You know me, I'm a little innocuous Bob Kincaid. Dear Leader's talking points today. It was pitiful. It used to be with Hollywood and TV, you got, 13 weeks or so before they went into reruns? These people have been in reruns now since roughly January of 2005 with the inauguration. Same old shtick, same old tired rhetoric. And that's what we got again today. We got more rhetoric from George. No plans, no hope, no future, just more death. It was disgusting. But they did have a new banner, where in May of 2003, he stood on the aircraft carrier in his little Roger Ramjet suit in front of that sign that said, Mission Accomplished. Today, he had a new sign. And, what was it? Plan for Victory. I swear, these people are backpedaling so fast, we'll have Gerald Ford's whip inflation now buttons out before year's end. We know now that the war was wrong to start. We know it was evil to begin a war against a country that had never acted in aggression against us. We're not going to go back to the April Glaspie memo. So, rather than show us a plan for success in Iraq, what did George do? At 33 minutes and 15 seconds into the speech, he quoted Joe Lieberman. And at that point, I just put my hands up in the air. Well, enough said, speech over. I remember the great line from John Stewart who said Joe Lieberman was a candidate for voters who just didn't think George Bush was Jewish enough. I can never, I can never see Joe Lieberman without having that ugly little vision pop up in my mind that was seared into my brain the night of the Chimp in Chief's last State of the Union speech, when he came down off the stage and planted a big old wet sloppy right on Joe Lieberman.
Well, he went a little funny in the head. Just a little funny. And he went and did a silly thing.
Yeah. Joe Lieberman cozying up to George Bush. Yeah, it's a little silly. Joe Lieberman is going to be the last Democrat who is still convinced that we're right to be over there slaughtering Arabs when the entire nation has finally turned on George Bush. Stay the course. Pat Paulson looking. Never mind. 38 minutes and 15 seconds into the speech, George did manage to remind us that criticizing the war is a bad thing. He said it was bad to question the war. He said at 38 minutes and 15 seconds into the speech, it was bad to say things like, you can support the troops but not the president. That it was bad to say things like, well, I just think it's a bad idea. What's going to happen is they're going to be over there for 10, 15, maybe 20 years. At 38 minutes and 15 seconds into the speech, George Bush reminded us that it's bad for people to say things like, explain to the mothers and fathers of American servicemen that may come home in body bags why their son or daughter have to give up their life. That it's bad to say things like, the president is once again releasing American military might on a foreign country with an ill-defined objective and no exit strategy. He has yet to tell the Congress how much this operation will cost, and he has not informed our nation's armed forces about how long they will be away from home. These strikes do not make for a sound foreign policy. He reminded us that it's bad for politicians to say things like, American foreign policy is now one huge big mystery. Simply put, the administration is trying to lead the world with a feel-good foreign policy. He reminded us that it's bad to say things like, if we're going to commit American troops, we must have be certain they have a clear mission, an achievable goal, and an exit strategy. And that it's bad to say things like, I had doubts about the bombing campaign from the beginning. I didn't think we had done enough in the diplomatic area. Or that it's bad to say things like, victory means exit strategy, and it's important for the president to explain to us what that exit strategy is. Those are all bad things. It's bad to question the motives of the war. Of course, all of those things, you know, were said by godless, soulless, filthy, motherless Republicans about Bill Clinton. You can support the troops, but not the president, Representative Tom DeLay. Victory means exit strategy, and it's important for the president to explain to us what the exit strategy is, Governor George W. Bush. You understand, it's what they do. They're filthy, they're disgusting, and they are psychotic hypocrites.
Monsieur! Has it lost?
Pretty much. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Support our troops. We hear it practically every day. We read it in the papers, in yard signs, on bumper stickers. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. For more than 60 years, the USO has tirelessly maintained a bridge back home for our soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, and coast guardsmen around the world who fight to preserve the freedoms we hold so dear. The USO receives no government funding. It employs only private citizens and volunteers and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people to fulfill its mission. Help us support our troops. To find out more about the USO and how you can help, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at USO.org.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Liberals built America. Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. About 27 minutes before the hour. Just to flesh things out a little bit, you heard all those quotes. Every one of those things that I read were expressed by, how about that, hypocrite Republicans. 2,100 dead and counting in Iraq now. But, of course, you don't hear Tom DeLay saying things like you can support the troops but not the president. Oh, no. That's down the memory hole. NASCAR America will never remember something like that, and it's largely true. But I do. You do. Victory means exit strategy, and it's important for the president to explain what the exit strategy is. George W. Bush, you filthy monster. We didn't get an explanation of an exit strategy today, nor are we likely to get one anytime in the near future. American foreign policy is now one huge, big mystery. Tom DeLay again. The president is once again releasing American military might on a foreign country with an ill-defined objective and no exit strategy. He has yet to tell the Congress how much this operation will cost. That, of course, is Senator Rick, I like to play with dead things, Santorum. Explain to the mothers and the fathers of American servicemen that may come home in body bags why their son or daughter have to give up their life. Why, that's from Sean Hannity Job. On the Sleaze News Channel. It's hard to say much beyond the fact that these people are loathsome and despicable. Is this not the final proof? Is this not the proof we all finally need to understand that they will do anything to advance their own political agenda? I was against the war in Iraq. I also happen to be against the war in Kosovo. I'm generally against war unless we're the ones getting attacked. You know, I take serious, for all the right-wing talk about the original intent of the framers of the Constitution, I actually read what they said and take them seriously. I take George Washington seriously when he says avoid foreign entanglements. On the other hand, the Republicans just trot it out when it happens to be handy. Well, I think it's a bad idea. What's going to happen is they're going to be over there for 10, 15, maybe 20 years. That was Joe Scarborough. You know, Scarborough Country, the congressman who was found with, in whose office was found a dead, beautiful young woman, Lori Klosutis, whose autopsy had to be dummied up by a medical examiner who'd had his pathology license pulled by the state of Missouri. Yeah, that Joe Scarborough. I wouldn't leave my children alone with any one of these pigs. And I would advise you to adopt the same stance. My God, if we're going to commit American troops, we must be certain they have a clear mission, an achievable goal, and an exit strategy. Karen Hughes. Speaking on behalf of George W. Death. Do you understand now? Do you get it? Let's see. A few more comments from the notes. Let's see. Bad to question war. Oh yeah. And the recurring theme at 40 minutes and 35 seconds into this miserable screed. This babble. At 40 minutes and 35 seconds in, George declares that the war in Iraq is really World War II and Iraq is really Nazi Germany. At some 25 seconds later, at 41 minutes, he decides that, well, okay, it's not just World War II, it's World War II and the Cold War. All rolled up. He's the biggest wartime president ever. He's Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Harry Truman and Woodrow Wilson all rolled into a ball of boop. Yes, dear.
Well, why hasn't this war been declared? It's not been legally declared.
Well, we're not into declaring wars. We haven't declared one since World War II.
Well, if
that's troublesome to Congress. Congress can't be bothered with that. They've got flag-burning amendments to consider and the control of women's insides to worry about.
Well, I mean, if you're going to say it's a war, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, then it's a duck.
Yeah, well, you know, you could make that argument.
Bring out the war bonds. We need them.
Well, and the word sacrifice, I went back and double-checked. I checked it against the transcript. The word sacrifice did not appear. You know, generally, war is not supposed to be something that's pleasant for a nation to enter into. Korea has been referred to as the Forgotten War. Well, this isn't the Forgotten War. This is the war we just can't be bothered with. This is the war where you're, as long as you've got your stupid little made-in-China yellow ribbon magnet on the back of your great big gas-guzzling SUV, as long as you've got that there, you're okay. You've made your sacrifice. You sacrificed $4.95 at the Rippy Mart to pick this thing up and slapped it on you. Okay, you're supporting the troops. Groovy. Maybe an American flag magnet while you're at it, also made in China. This is the hypocrite war. This is the war of heartbroken military mothers, but no one else. This is the war, well, this is the war that never should have begun. This is disgusting. Let's see. No, military mothers had a few words after the speech today. Karen Unsicker is a military mom. Her son is set to deploy for Iraq next March. She participates in weekly rallies with the group Progressive Action for the Common Good. Karen Unsicker said, in no uncertain terms, "President Bush deceived us in getting us into this war. He's so wrong-headed and stubborn about keeping us there. Hearts are being broken. Families are destroyed every single day in Iraq. Karen Unsicker understands because she has a child that is going to face death for nothing. For nothing. And maybe 5-10 years from now, when there's a radical Islamist state in place in Iraq, what will the parents of the fallen say to themselves? They won't be able to say anything to George Bush. George will be off talking to the cows forevermore in Crawford. But what will they say about the useless, senseless, stupid, muddle, addle-pated slaughter of their babies? Children they held in their arms, babes who suckled at their mother's breast, who were blown limb from limb for lies. Dirty lies. Karen Unsicker's son hasn't gone yet, but he will go. And Karen Unsicker already understands what he's going for. Nothing. Nothing. Oh, God, forgive us. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Cause mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Roof fall accidents have declined significantly in recent years, but they still continue to claim the lives of too many working miners. Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. No miner has to die from a roof fall accident. Miners and mine operators can take steps to reduce the likelihood of these tragic accidents in underground mines. Always follow the approved roof control plan for your mining operation. Make required roof examinations before starting work. Look at the roof closely, listen, and sound it out. Install additional roof support when you encounter adverse roof conditions. Always use maximum supervision and oversight when performing retreat mining operations. Never, ever walk or travel under unsupported roof. Make the right decision. Focus more attention on roof control in underground mines. Thank you for listening.
So, which one's yours?
The one at bat.
Strike two.
Oh, that's okay, Chris.
Only my kid could strike out in T-ball.
Oh, run, Chris, go!
Looks like he's having some trouble running.
Oh, he's wandering way off the baseline.
It's like he can't see.
Oh, my gosh, his helmet is too big.
It's as big as a bucket.
You know, I must have gotten him an adult one. What was I thinking?
You're out.
Oh.
When safety equipment doesn't fit, it's game over. That goes for your kid, too. If they're too big for a car seat, that doesn't mean they're the right size for an adult safety belt. If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat. It raises them up so the safety belt fits properly. And the right fit makes all the difference to their future. To learn more, visit www.boosterseat.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
I've been walking down the street. I've been watching every step. I've been talking to who I meet. I've been talking to myself. I've been working, I've been giving the world owes me some kind of living. This is it, 'cause I'm alive.
And not only did the military moms respond, folks like Karen Unsicker, this is Head On, I'm Bob. The largest Iraq veterans group also had a few words following today's ugly little screed. That would be Iraq veteran organization Operation Truth. Their executive director is Paul Rykoff. This is over at Raw Story if you want to go have a look at it. A great site, Raw Story. He issued a statement after Dear Leader spoke at the Naval Academy today. He said, and I quote, "The plan the president outlined for Iraq is an improvement over the administration's previous plan, which consisted only of stay the course. But as a veteran of this war and someone who talks to other veterans every day, I can say that in the eyes of the troops, this plan still falls short in two important ways. First, there are still no metrics for success. Our troops must know that what objective guidelines will be used to declare that a goal has been reached. They deserve to know that their road home is based on hard data and not just a subjective opinion of success. Second, a timeline for success must be established. Whether that means 1 year, 2 years, or 5 years, our troops need a realistic time frame in which to achieve a well-defined mission. Without that, our troops and their families cannot prepare to meet the obligations of our commitment to the Iraqi people." He said the president must provide well-defined conditions for success and a timeline for our commitment in Iraq. Until that happens, this plan cannot be seen as credible in the eyes of the troops and veterans of this war. I wouldn't give this plan a failing grade. I would give it an incomplete. I think Mr. Rykoff is rather generous in that assessment. But the fact remains, there was a lot of poppycock and a lot of hoo-ah today, but very little substance. And you know, plenty of outright lies. George talked about all the thousands and thousands, there are thousands of Iraqi military, and they're leading the fight. And then, you know, it took a while, but he finally got around to mentioning the fact that only one battalion is fully functional. 700 Iraqis. That's it. The Iraqi army, as you would measure it in terms of an army being actually ready to do the business that armies do, out of all the thousands he cited, only 700 are ready to get the job done. And I'm thinking, you know, we've ramped up troops from 130,000 to 160,000 in advance of the grand and glorious election in December, and we can't get the job done with 160,000 troops, but George is thinking, yeah, 700 will do for the Iraqis. No, he's not. He touted the fact that they've got some airplanes now. Woo-hoo! We've got to come around to deal with the fact that, yeah, we started this mess. Saddam would have fallen at some point in time. He might have fallen in 1991 when the Shia rose up and George Bush the First stabbed him in the back. Might have happened. That might have been enough to put Saddam out of business. But you know how it is with a Bush. You know, you wouldn't want to be alone in a dark alley with them, or facing a fight with a Bush at your back, because there wouldn't be anybody at your back. You know, Bushes run.
Did you know that the National Guard is offering current guardsmen, for every recruit that they bring in that completes basic training, they get $1,000 bonus?
Oh, yeah.
And that West Virginia has one of the highest recruitment numbers, but they feel like they're going to fall short this year?
Well, no. I read that article, dear, and you're right in what you say. But, no, we routinely in West Virginia, and this is not just this war, this is every war, we routinely send our sons and now our daughters to serve. And nothing has changed this time through either. You know, this is West Virginia is fertile ground for recruiting.
But that ought to tell you something. They're digging for more people. And if they're digging for more people, that means they want to send more people.
Well, sure they do.
But the right wing says, oh, no, we're not going to send any more.
Well, no, George said today, dear, we've heard it a million times, if the generals ask me for more troops, I will send more troops.
Well, you know, there's people on our boards that says that, you know, they're not going to do that.
Well, I mean, look, we've got 160,000 there. Eric Shinseki, who was general at the time, right before this war started, told Rummy point blank, it's going to take 500,000 soldiers to get this job done, and they fired him for saying it. And sure. then they sent in an undergunned, underarmored, underequipped force of not even half that to do the job.
Well, and I think there's one thing being forgotten. Murtha didn't want to bring the troops all home.
No.
He wanted them to back off, and that wasn't even good enough.
What he said was, withdraw our forces to the periphery.
But the right-wing spin on it has been that he has been a coward.
Oh, he's a cheese-eating, wine-drinking French surrender monkey, Murtha is.
So, you know, it just amazes me that these people can, like, breathe and walk at the same time.
Well, they walk on their knuckles.
No, if you take the earphones out, they quit breathing.
Breathe in, breathe out. That's an old blonde joke. So, where was I? The Iraqi forces. We've got 700 fully trained Iraqi troops. $5 billion has gotten us 700 fully trained Iraqi troops. That tells you something about right-wing Republican fiscal conservatism, doesn't it? And West Virginia. Yeah, this bonus is out there because West Virginia is picking up the slack for other states where they're not having so much success anymore. Virtually every other state in the Union is down in its recruiting. We're up in our National Guard recruiting. You know, again, it's a little bit of what we do. It's what you hear from your dad. It's what you hear from your granddad. When the call came, I went. You know, it's what it is to be a West Virginian. We're not like some Bush where when the call comes, the call comes for George and George gets on, hey, Daddy! Help me!
But then they were calling for 18-year-olds on the back of a learner's application. You'll find that it asks young men from 16 to 24,
yeah,
if they want to register for the draft. Do you really want to take a 16-year-old and put a gun in their hands.
Look,
and send them off.
Dear, it's already in large part come to that, not 16-year-olds yet. And then what Agnes is talking about is the application for a learner's permit. If you're male and 16, they encourage you to go ahead and register for the draft. Now, you are not legally required to do so until 18.
I want to know why they even suggest it. It's appalling.
For recruiting purposes. For recruiting purposes. But even among the 18-year-olds, recruiting is so bad that we're now willing to take, I forget what Jim mentioned it the other night, Category 4 or Group 4, whatever. These are people who can't pass their GED. And the military's willing to take them now. Now, that training's really, you know, that no-torture training, that is surely going to, yeah, that's going to sink in with a kid that can't pass his GED. That's just pathetic. And interestingly, Rummy yesterday in his news conference with General Pace was talking, and he said, and these troops will be trained that whenever they see inappropriate conducts, torture, going on, they will be trained to stop it. And, you know, this is a 4-star Marine general. And he himself would rather die than see his corps, see his corps' reputation besmirched. And Rummy stopped him. In the middle of the press conference, Rummy stopped General Pace and said, well, you don't mean, like, physically stop it, do you? And General Pace looked at him and said, yes, sir, I mean if they see it going on, dishonorable conduct, they will be trained to stop it. And you could see the tears welling up in Rummy's little eyes, because Rummy likes torture. Cheney likes torture. George, who branded people in his own fraternity, people whom he called brother, branded them with white hot wire in college. They like torture, you see. So we got another hour of our Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On the way when we come back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle. For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Thank you. magazine. So wave the flag and take a stand. Stand in line and shake his hand. He says he's your friend, a friend of the common man. He's got all the answers. The good days will be back soon. There's one more. Wave the flag and take a stand. Stand in line and shake his hand. He says he's your friend, a friend of the common man. What we deserve. So wave the flag and take a stand. Stand in line to shake his hand. He says he's your friend, a friend of the common man.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right. Welcome back. Hour number two. You know the phone number, of course, don't you? It's 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. And, of course, the alternative number, 304-658-3333. Email's real easy, too, bob@headonradio.com. I mean, you know the drill. And my lovely wife, Agnes, also at agnes@headonradio.com. I'm behind the board for the moment. Little parenting moment going on that Agnes has taken care of. Interesting. Interesting story out just an hour or so ago from the Associated Press. Nancy Pelosi today decided to get behind John Murtha's call for a withdrawal of our troops to the periphery. Pretty interesting, really. She says now, "We should follow the lead of Congressman John Murtha," this is a quote, "who has put forth a plan to make America safer, to make our military stronger, and to make Iraq more stable. That's what the American people and our troops deserve." Now, never mind the fact that the godless, soulless, motherless Republicans have called what this decorated double war veteran proposed as cutting and running, you know, that from, you know, the chicken hawks, the guys who never even put the uniform on. And Nancy Pelosi also said, "I believe that a majority of our caucus clearly supports Mr. Murtha." She said she wouldn't call for a party caucus position. And, of course, that's one of those little problems we have being Democrats. There are times when being a Democrat is very close akin to the old saw about trying to herd cats across a parking lot or, you know, push a wheelbarrow full of frogs. As long as you've got people like, well, you know, Joe Lieberman, and yeah, I know, he's in the Senate, not the House. But as long as you've got the Joe Liebermans out there running around going, "I think we should probably kill a few more Arabs before we leave. We are on the road to success." But that, you know, that of course, is what we're dealing with. There are a lot of people who have not figured out yet that the American character and the American nature is besmirched when we invade other nations and start wars instead of defending the ones that others start. And of course, no one... "Well, have you forgot about 9/11? No. No, I remember very well that we were attacked by the Bush family's business partners, the Saudis, on 9/11. God, how, there are times when it just it hurts right between your eyes when you contemplate what the American people are willing to put up with from their politicians. Now, all over the media for the last 2 days, we have had time after time sound bites and video bites, video clips of Randy Duke Cunningham. You remember the war hero, Randy Duke Cunningham.
Morning, Miss Cunningham.
And his weepy Jimmy Swaggart like apotheosis before the cameras.
"I know that I will forfeit my freedom, my reputation, my worldly possessions. Most importantly,
yacht?
The trust.
Oh, the trust, not the yacht.
Of my friends and family.
Yeah, sure, okay. But America still doesn't know a whole lot about Randy Duke Cunningham, this sleaze bucket who used his congressional office as a personal slush fund, who lived on a yacht in the Potomac named the Dukester. Yeah, he did, and that was one of the bribes, the yacht. He got a yacht. And a lot of people got upset at me. Believe me, I got the email to prove it. Got upset at me for what I suggested the other night about how Congressman Cunningham could atone for what he has done to the Congress, to the honor of the American system of government, and to you and me, we the people. People got very upset at that. And I think some of this has to do with the fact that, you know, he was weeping and he was crying. And people sort of, well, they don't know, they really didn't know who Randy Duke Cunningham really is.
Morning, Miss Cunningham.
I got some more quotes for you from Randy Duke Cunningham. Let's see, from an article in the San Diego Union-Tribune of October 26, 1992, he called Bill Clinton a KGB dupe. Let's see, about John Kerry. We do not need someone that would vote like a Jane Fonda as commander-in-chief. And then, that was from April 23rd, 2004. October the 10th, 1992, talking about Vietnam War protesters, Randy Duke Cunningham,
morning, Miss Cunningham,
said, I would have no hesitation about lining them up and shooting them, Vietnam War protesters. Those people should be shot for what they did to us over there. Yeah, stopped the war maybe a couple of years early and saved another 10, 20,000 lives. You never know. But they should be shot. This is a class act, Randy Duke Cunningham. Oh, boy, what a class act. And I've got a soundbite for you. I'm not quite, we're not quite ready for it. But when we come back, a soundbite. Oh, you're just going to love Randy Duke Cunningham. You are just going to love him. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
On a time in a small cottage lived a boy named Chuck. One day, Chuck heard a knock from inside the wall.
Who is it?
He cried, for Chuck cried rather easily.
It is I, the energy hog over here,
said a voice. Now, an energy hog is what you have when people waste energy. Chuck ran to tell his family.
There's a hog in our house,
exclaimed Chuck.
That's no way to talk about your Aunt Melba,
said his mother, and sent him to his room.
That does it,
said Chuck. He raced to his computer and logged on to energyhog.org.
I'll just have to get rid of it myself.
At energyhog.org, Chuck played cool games and learned to use energy wisely. He learned that by switching to better light bulbs, he had the power to rid the cottage of the evil energy hog forever.
I'm leaving, but I shall return,
vowed the hog.
Don't count on it, bacon breath,
vowed Chuck. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org, or a switch in time, save swine.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council. November is National Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Lung cancer is the nation's leading cause of cancer death, killing more than breast, prostate, colon, and skin cancer combined. Early detection of lung cancer when it's most treatable is key to survival. New screening methods such as CAT scans are being used in clinical trials. Learn your risk and the symptoms of lung cancer. Smoking is the major risk, but you can develop lung cancer even if you don't smoke. Coughing, wheezing, and fatigue are just a few of the symptoms that are often confused with less serious conditions. Treatment may include surgery, radiation treatments, chemotherapy, or one of several interventional radiology procedures. Discuss treatment options with your doctor. For more information on lung cancer risk, symptoms, detection, and treatment, visit www.radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org. This health reminder from the Radiological Society of North America.
So it's 16 and a half minutes after the hour on this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, well, let's go straight to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're Head On. Oh, Jim. Okay, Jim's not there, so...
He is here.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
I said, good evening. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, thanks.
Look, I have a suggestion, and I want you to take this to heart, okay?
Okay.
And I thought a lot about this, and I've been on this earth about 15 years longer than you have.
Okay.
So with age comes a little wisdom. I don't think you're going to help your cause or your program by calling people things like Republicans and by calling all Republicans godless and soulless. And I don't think that's right.
Well, Jim, show me one that's not.
Well, I don't have to do that. That's not my position.
Well, no,
I'm not leveling the accusation. You are.
You've taken a position that it's inappropriate for me to do that.
I'm asking for you and how you can, you know, you can win battles and lose wars. And I'm trying to tell you that I think you could gain a larger audience and have more people listen to you if you will engage in a little less shtick. And more just straight out. Because what you're doing is this. Listen to me, please. You're putting yourself on the same level as some of these other people that you decry, whom I decry. No one has been a greater supporter of you since you've been on the air than I. Okay?
Okay.
And you know that for a fact. Every night, night after night, go back through your archives.
Sure.
But I'm making a suggestion. Drop the Republican and keep it straight and, you know, don't put yourself on their level. And I think by trying to paint all of them with the same brush that you will win a lot more flies with honey than you can vinegar. Now, I don't like what these people have done any more than you have, okay? But we live in the same country and we got to live together. And we got to come together at some point of this country. This nation is just going to blow wide apart.
I understand what you're saying, Jim, but we do need to clear a couple of things up. One, for me, this show is not shtick, and there is no portion of this show that is shtick.
Good, because this is radio, not vaudeville.
This is so when I talk about a member of the Republican Party, you can rest assured that I am as sincere as the day is long.
Oh, I know that you are.
I don't like them, Jim.
I know.
I don't even like them a little bit. I don't consider them fellow members, fellow citizens with me in the United States of America, because they hate my country, Jim. They do.
Well, they accuse you of the same thing, Bob.
Right, exactly. And I can provide chapter and verse of why I don't and they do.
Well,
starting a war and not even sending troops over with appropriate body armor and yet waving the flag, that's perverse.
Well, don't you think their sins are finding them out? Don't you think that people are now becoming aware of that? The tide is coming to turn in our favor, okay? And what I'm saying is this. I think we can be a little more magnanimous in victory than these people would ever be.
No, I understand, Jim, and you know what? You may be right.
I know I'm right.
You're calm and you're reasoned in your approach, and we may be able to afford to be magnanimous in victory, but we have not achieved victory yet.
Well, as it approaches, this may not be the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning. And we need to realize.
You were raised in the church, as was I. And we understand a couple of fundamental tenets of our teaching. And one is that forgiveness is preceded always by repentance. And I have yet to see repentance coming out of these hateful people. And I tend to say what I think about them.
Well, I understand that. However, you know, I think that with some of them, you will never find any type of request for forgiveness.
No.
And those are not the ones to whom I am appealing, okay? Or I'm not even defending them. Those are the people that I'm referencing, or am not referencing. But there are some, and I talked to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And people are beginning to realize, you know, we were wrong. We voted for the wrong person. And what I don't want to see happen is for any type of word to perhaps cause one of these people to take a misstep in the wrong direction because they get offended, because their pride is hurt, or because of the nature of humanity itself. That is my position.
Well, I understand that, Jim. And maybe, you know, maybe we've got... I never designed this show to be an outreach to misguided voters. That is not the purpose. There are two by my way of seeing it, Jim. There are two approaches in progressive talk radio. On the one hand, you do have people, and they're out there. Springer on Air America, Peter Werbe is very good at it. Tom Hartman does a lot of outreach stuff. They do reach out and try to bring in the misguided into the fold. Then there is a second purpose. And that second purpose is to try to inject a little bit of fighting spirit into the diehards of our party. Because fight is something that we have lost for a long, long time. We didn't stand up and fight against Reagan. We barely stood up and fought against Bush. The Democratic Congress, while it was still Democratic before the turnaround in 1994, was busier shoving shivs into Bill Clinton's back than they were being Democrats. And so I view this as a little bit more of a we call it a sandbox and we make jokes. This is largely a show for progressives, for liberals, for Democrats who adhere to Democratic principles just like you do.
Well, I think it's a show for everyone if they want to listen. And I think that you will gain a greater listening audience and you will consolidate faithful a little bit better by being a little more palliative than punitive, and not by excoriation. Because I will be led, but not driven.
Certainly. And well,
I want you to take that to heart.
I am, and you know, you don't need any leading, and you certainly don't need any driving. We've had conversations in the previous manifestation of this show when you were far more inclined to call for the revolution than I was.
Well, I simply just point out the lessons of history.
Right.
And I simply was pointing out where we were heading.
Now,
based upon I understand history is, because, you know, as radio is your métier, history is mine. That's where all my formal training is.
Sure.
And I can tell you that, you know, if people are pushed and goaded in a certain direction...
They will go in the opposite.
They will. Well, what I'm saying is revolutions just don't spring up and happen by themselves. They have underlying and immediate causes. That was what I was referring to back in those days.
Well,
I don't care to see a revolution happen in this country, because I'll tell you one thing. You know, revolutions devour their own children.
Yes, they do.
I have no desire for that. But what I'm saying is, and you can take this to heart or not, and you can discount it totally, and it's fine with me.
Well, I would hardly do that with what you say, because I know you say it sincerely.
And I say it from a position of relative authority. And you know I do. And you know I'm right. In your heart, you know I'm right. And if you're a Christian, and if you're brought up in the church, you will understand that sometimes you do have to turn the other cheek. And we have turned the other cheek, yes. But there are conservative Democrats who could be of great help to you.
Well, I have conservative Democrats I have no problem with.
But, I mean, these are the kind of people that get angry.
I have never aimed a barb at a conservative Democrat short of Joe Lieberman, and he's not a Democrat in the first place.
Well, I realize that, and I can appreciate where you're coming from, certainly.
Fiscal conservative Democrats, absolutely. I'm practically one of them myself. But I don't believe, you know, when we get into the semantic arguments about conservative versus liberal, we get onto very much shifting sands. If there are conservatives, so-called fiscal conservatives inside, now the social conservatives, Democrat or Republican, the people who believe that it's better to let a child die than teach them how to use a condom, Democrat or Republican, those people can go straight to hell for all I care, Jim. You know, the right to lifers, same place. I got no use for them. And I am cynical, okay, Jim? I am truly, truly cynical on this point. I don't believe that you're going to bring, you're going to suddenly find a right to lifer out there concerned about what happens to the poor babies who've already been born. It's not going to happen.
You and I have had many conversations about that.
They're not going to come around, are they?
I don't know what they're going to do. I'm hoping. Now, a lot of these people are hidebound by their faith. Roman Catholics, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a core belief of the Roman Catholic Church. That's hard to fight.
Well, it is, and you know, I can
as wrong as I think that they are, and as mistaken as I think the Vatican is on the position of birth control and the use of condoms to prevent sexually transmitted diseases. A lot of these people are simply hidebound, just as hidebound in their teachings and their faith as you are in yours.
Well, but you mentioned the Roman Catholic Church, where that's concerned, Jim, and this is a very important conversation, and I'm glad you raised it. Where the Roman Catholic Church is concerned, I can tolerate their hidebound ignorance better than I can some other faiths. Because at the same time that the Roman Catholic Church says, you know, abortion should be illegal and nobody should ever use a condom and whatever,
but I think
they also, on the other end of the spectrum, say that you don't execute people in the name of the state. And I share that with them as passionately as they hold it. So they're consistent from from womb to grave, I suppose you would say. But these other people, these people who are part of a manufactured industry that is out there that making literally billions of dollars a year trading on people's inherent bigotries, and that is the entire right to life movement. Those people, I have no use for, Democrat or Republican, and what I'll say on the radio, I'll say to their face. Because I have to be the same person in the house and in the studio that I am on the road.
Well, I have no doubt that you are. However, aside from Roman Catholics, to whom are you specifically referring?
Well, the right to life movement is huge in the church that I'm still recovering from, the Southern Baptists. And yet they came out they rejoiced when George Bush started this war that's killed 100,000 innocent civilians.
I see. Well,
that's not consistent. And the Southern Baptists rejoice in capital punishment.
Well, I understand that, and I am definitely in your corner there, because I can't understand what is the difference between capital punishment and, you know, as they see it, when a person is 18 years of age, then when they, of course, say that abortion is nothing but capital punishment, in my opinion.
Now,
that's what they're saying. But there are glaring and definite inconsistencies with these people.
You know, you have a better memory than I do for this issue, Jim. I wasn't even born when Eisenhower was in office. He strikes me as having been, he is the last honorable Republican who has occupied the White House, as far as I can tell.
I don't think so. I don't concur.
You don't?
No, I don't think he was.
Well, see, you took me to task for saying things like Republican, and you're just telling me that even Eisenhower wasn't an honorable man in the White House.
I don't think that he was, because there were certain things that he did that were absolutely wrong.
Well, the CIA coup against Mossadegh in Iran comes to mind.
I mean, you know, to tell you the truth, if you want to take every administration from George Washington on forward, you can find something good about it, and you can find something bad about it, okay?
Right, but in balance, a lot of them were more honorable than dishonorable, right?
Well, I mean, for example, I've heard you mention things about President Harding. Well, Harding, you know, history is now revisiting Harding, and is painting him with a different brush, a man who was more than just Teapot Dome and scandals. You know, there were some things that even... some things that happened during his administration that were very good. For example, a naval treaty, and he was a fantastic foreign affairs president.
Well, it probably stems from his days as a newspaper editor. And I think Harding gets revisited because he was long regarded as the single stupidest man that had ever occupied the White House, and we've got a new holder of that title.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that.
So what I'm getting at here,
okay.
I don't know of any Republicans that want to come over to my way of thinking. And my way of thinking is, you know, crazy things like working people being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. I haven't seen a splinter group of the Republican Party come out, Jim, that's for that. I haven't seen the Republican Party that believes in that fundamental tenet that you and I have, being proud sons of the old South, that fundamental tenet, you know, mind your own business, you know?
I don't even take any pride in that, because the South was wrong in that war.
Well, the South was wrong in that war, but one of the things your mama probably taught you, and I know my mama did, was, boy, mind your own business.
Yeah.
And I can't find a mind your own business platform in the Republican Party.
That lesson is taught north of the Mason-Dixon line, too, Bob. I've lived in different parts of the country to know that. What I'm trying to say is this. I think that at the end of this current administration, you will find a number of people who will realize that they were wrong in voting for this man and putting him back in the White House. And you will find a number of people who are very sorry that they have cooperated by sending men back to Congress who would pass H.R. 1, the Medicare Reform Bill, which has hurt lots of people. And I think that a lot of people are beginning to realize, when they read the paper and they listen to the news, I mean, look at the facts that are being put out on CNN and the other news channels and the polls. And people are beginning to realize that. And, you know, I think that there will be a time when you're going to be able to find as many so-called these diehard Republicans as we did fascists in Rome when Mussolini fell and we took Rome in 43.
Well, that's a tenet you and I have agreed on in the past. But I must admit, I have a slightly more cynical view of what's going to happen in 2008 than you do. There are a lot of people who are repenting of their vote for George Bush. There is no doubt about that. The poll numbers don't lie.
All right.
However, George Bush is done. George Bush can't run again. We will, for good or ill, and I think it's for good, we will see no more of George Bush come January 2009.
Unfortunately, you're wrong, because he already will have at least two appointees on the high court.
Well, yeah, in that way,
you will see his shadow.
Yeah, he will have cast a long shadow in that regard. But the thing is, in 2008, in the 2008 general election, what you will find, Jim, is that Bush is gone, and I'm already reading it in some of the so-called conservative circles. There are people saying, you know, George Bush is no conservative. I can't stand George Bush. George Bush is pure poison. We had no idea he was like this when we put him into office, but our ideas are still good.
Well, who do you think they're going to put into office then, or try to elect?
It's hard to say, but whoever is elected or whoever is nominated, whether it be Giuliani or McCain, you know, McCain is clearly the front runner at this point. Whoever is nominated will have behind him that hate machine. And just because most of the states had their, for instance, their anti-gay marriage referendums in the United States in 2004, there are other states that have not yet. Plus, the impending threat of the overturning of Roe versus Wade will ignite a grass fire across this country. Because overturning Roe doesn't mean abortion becomes illegal as the law of the land.
Well, do you think that's going to happen?
Sammy Alito makes me think it's going to happen. Because the Senate Democrats do not have the stones to mount a filibuster against that monster.
Well, I don't think I understood from the evening news tonight that his selection process was not going well at all.
It's not. But still, when you've got people, and I hate to criticize my fellow Democrats, but sometimes it just makes me want to run screaming into the night, Jim. When you've got Senator Byrd sitting down and shaking hands and coming out all Neville Chamberlain-like and saying, well, I'm convinced that Alito is dedicated to the religious rights of all America. That tells me that there's no hope of filibustering this guy.
Well, you know, I hope you're not putting the entire hopes of the country on Senator Byrd.
Well, I'm not, because other senators have come out and said, well, you know, Nelson out in Nebraska, so one of the Gang of 14, so-called moderate Democrat, came out and said, I think it'd be wrong to filibuster Judge Alito.
Well, unfortunately, I can't see into the future, and I have no crystal ball.
Well, nor
and
do I.
I'll be rolling along, my friend, so you have a good evening.
All right,
okay?
Take care, Jim.
Bye-bye.
I do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
What I'm getting at here, and I do take more cynical long view than Jim does, that machine will be alive and clicking on all eight cylinders come 2008. And I don't care if we nominate Jesus Christ fresh back from heaven. If the Republican smear machine will be there. What's that? Jesus says love your enemies? Jesus is soft on terrorism. We've seen it time and time and time again. Willie Horton's going to get your white daughter if you elect Michael Dukakis. We have seen it. Ronald Reagan, well, the welfare mommies driving Cadillacs and picking up free groceries. We have seen it. And my job in part, at least as I view it and understand it. And I'm, you know, listen, I take criticism. My God, can you imagine somebody trying to offer constructive, friendly criticism to the likes of Flush Flimball or Sean Hannity job? It wouldn't happen. This is a conversation we can have on a show like this because, as a liberal and a proud one, I like to engage in conversation. I like to engage in dialogue. Maybe I am being overly mean, but I'm not. You know, I haven't quite gotten to that state that's described by the Buddhists. What is it? Samsara? I forget. I haven't gotten there yet. I still have a lot of work to do. Maybe I've got 19 or 20 more lives worth of work to do. And when I see evil, I'm going to call it. I can't help but do that. And I guess I've sort of burned it into my brain. When I think of the GOP, the first, I don't think Republican anymore. I have to force myself to say Republican. I say Republican. There are others who say Rethuglican. Because, what's the Bible verse? By their fruits ye shall know them. Yeah, welcome to prayer meeting night. By their fruits you shall know them. And the fruit that we have seen has been pure poison, and it has fallen from every Republican tree across this great nation. What have they given us? Nothing. Nothing but misery and death and torment, and turned this nation into a torture state. And though I was raised in the church, and a lot of it took, I find it incredibly difficult to turn the other cheek to that sort of behavior. And so if I am bothering anyone out there by my vociferous and passionate and persistent disgust with those people who are in power and are day by day destroying this nation, I tender to you my humble, humble apology. If there is someone out there that desires to be reached out to and feels like I am pushing them away, holy Moses, I apologize. I do so sincerely apologize. My party And my philosophy is a reach out party and a reach out philosophy. The hand is out there, but the olive branch has been extended for lo, these 25 years. And every time the olive branch has been extended, we've had our blessed hands lopped off and brought back a bloody stump and wondered why and taken the left hand in Christ-like fashion and stuck the olive branch out with it and brought back a bloody stump again. What's wrong? Let's go to the phones. Peter is with us. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Good evening, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I mean, I guess we're having a little dark night of the soul thing going on here.
Well, I'm recalling to respond to that. Really, I just wanted to gently point out to Jim that Jesus, in his time, referred to the Pharisees. The Pharisees of his time were, of course, the Dobsons and the Falwells of our time. But Jesus referred to those people as a generation of vipers.
Yes.
Yes, he did. And if he can call them snakes, you can call them piglicans all day long.
Well, I appreciate that, Peter, because I know you take your spirituality seriously, as does Jim, and as do I.
Furthermore, we are at war. These people have declared war on the heart and the soul of this country, on the heart and the soul of the church. We are in desperate warfare against an evil generation of vipers, repiglicans. This is not the time for reconciliation. That happens later. Right now, we don't do the healing bit. We're at war.
Well, I remember the words of Abraham Lincoln, Peter, with malice toward none, with charity for all. But that was after the war was over.
Amen, brother.
I'm really challenged to figure out who to reach out to, and I mean this in no sense of sardonic sarcasm. I'm sincere. Where do we reach out?
Well, there are people who, and you mentioned them earlier, Werby Hartman, who do a kinder, gentler version of what you do, and perhaps he can change them hearts and minds. But you're not addressing that group. You're addressing a different group, and you're not going to get those people listed to your show anyway. And if they do, they're just going to call in repeating the Rush Limbaugh talking points. You have heard this for years. I know that you are so fed up with it you could scream. And, you know, what is the point? Call a viper, and go with it. And I'm all for Cunningham splitting his wrist.
Well, bless your little heart, Peter. I was trying not to say what I said the other night.
Well, I'll say it. I hope he'll split his wrist. You know, that man to the television who starts that whining. I cannot tell you the things I said to that screen. You know, I'm 53. I'm old enough to have had a past. Okay? I was addicted to drugs for, about 15 years. I've been clean now for many years. But, you know, I was on the wrong side of the law. I've been busted. I've been in jail. But I didn't weep like some kind of baby trying to get sympathy.
It was straight out of Jimmy Swaggart, wasn't it?
If you do the time, if you do the crime, you're going to do the time. You know, I have no patience for that because I've been there and I've done that.
I'm not going to make excuses for you, Peter, but the fact of the matter is you may have done what you did, but whatever you did, there was a certain influence of substances you've mentioned.
Oh, sure, yeah.
This guy did this stone cold sober.
Yes, that's true. That's even more damning.
Let me share something with you since I've got you here for a second, Peter. I've got a soundbite that I mentioned in the earlier part of the hour. I want to make sure that this gets played, because, like I said, I don't think people really know who Randy Duke Cunningham is. I want to share this soundbite with you, if I may.
Good. I don't know much about him either, other than that spectacle.
You're about to know all you ever wanted to.
Great.
Go ahead, Agnes.
Same people that would vote to cut defense $177 billion, the same ones that would put homos in the military, the same ones that would not fund BRAC, the same ones that would not clear up. No, I will not. Sit down, you socialist.
That's Randy Duke Cunningham.
Boy, that had all the power and flair of Hitler, didn't it?
It absolutely did. You know, first of all, homos in the military. Okay, then that's a start. And, I mean, this is from the floor of the House of Representatives. He challenged Representative David Obey to a fight, a fist fight on the floor.
It's shameful. Their behavior is shameful, and it deserves indictment. And that's what you're doing. And you're indicting them vocally and that's all what you should be doing, and I'm all for it.
Well, I think he engendered some real sympathy. You had your response, and I shared it in large part. But I think there were people out there that, oh my goodness, the poor man, he's been destroyed. This man deserves no sympathy.
Good point. You know, good point that you're showing who he actually is. Good point, because the whole crybaby, if you don't know anything about him, you would think it was honest repentance.
But
you were right when you said that he was just whining because he got caught. You were absolutely right.
Do you remember the whole fiasco around the Medicare prescription drug plan, Peter?
Oh, my Lord.
And how they held the vote open for hours upon hours in violation of the House rules.
Yes, they did.
And they had to twist the arm of a Congressman Nick Smith from Michigan, a Republican who was retiring at the end of that term, and they offered him a bribe to vote for the bill.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
it was to finance his son or some rigmarole.
Right, and his son was running for his seat. Cunningham came up to him in the arm-twisting process and looked this. Can you imagine being a father and having this said to you about your son? Cunningham walked up to him and said, "Your son is dead meat."
Oh, goody. Boy, I bet he said it with all the intensity that would let him know that he meant it.
Yeah. Let's see. He had prostate surgery, Cunningham did. And at Alvarado Hospital, he told a bunch of old men who had been through something similar, he said to them that no man would enjoy prostate cancer treatment, quote, unless he's Barney Frank.
Oh, my God.
These are sick monsters, Peter.
They are. And you just have to be real. And
And they're perverts. I mean,
well, yes, that too.
How perverse do you have to be? It's cancer, for heaven's sakes.
I agree.
It killed Frank Zappa.
Yes.
And this guy, the only thing he can do is equate a man undergoing treatment for prostate cancer with his vision of what gay sex is.
Oh, Lord. Well, yeah, there's no excuse. It's ignorance and it's hatred. It's all rolled up into a little for-profit ball.
Yeah, and this guy, I mean, this guy is good riddance to bad rubbish as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's true. And the analogy that I can think of is it's only the tip of the iceberg. God knows what's going on that we don't know about.
Oh, he's another one of those. He got indicted before he could be caught with a dead girl or a live boy.
Yes, the two fatal sins.
Peter, it's always such a pleasure to talk to you. Say hi to the gang in the chat room for me, would you?
Hey, chat room, I'm sorry I haven't been in tonight. I've been bad. I've been surfing the web and listening to Bob, but I'll come in a minute.
All right, thanks,
hello,
Peter.
Hello, Agnes. I love you.
All right, sure will. Take care.
Good night.
Bye now. I'm glad to have that little amen from Peter. And I don't dislike these people because I just run around looking for people to dislike. You know, listen to Duke Cunningham again. I should probably just loop this thing and run it for about 5 minutes. Listen to this
same
man.
Same people that would vote to cut defense $177 billion, the same ones that would put homos in the military, the same ones that would not fund BRAC, the same
Mr.
ones
Chairman,
that would not clear up.
Mr.
No,
Chairman.
I will not. Sit down, you socialist.
Sit down, you socialist. My God in heaven, can you imagine if a Democrat dared to speak that way to a member of the ruling party? Can you imagine? The rules of the House of Representatives themselves, if you pay attention and you watch, you will find that all comments must be directed to the Speaker. That's why it always, Mr. Speaker! That's why it's that way. You address your comments to the Speaker. You do not engage in colloquy with your fellow members of the House. I would imagine that rule was probably promulgated in the first place to keep members of the House away from each other's throats, because there was a time when swords were drawn in the well of the House, and duels were demanded and challenged. And this man dares to look at a female member of the House and say, "Sit down, you socialist." We are all Americans, and Jim's point, I take it very well. That is the way we liberals, we progressives, we Democrats, we decent people, we Americans look at it. We are all of us, brothers and sisters in our citizenship in this once great land. But I cannot emphasize enough, that is not how the other side feels. Listen, if you must, listen to Hannity, listen to Flush, listen to O'Reilly. Oh, wait, I got some O'Reilly for you. He was on the Today Show today. This is how... There are those of us on the anti-war side of things. There are those of us who don't believe in slaughtering children 100,000 at a time. And we've got some misgivings about the starting of this war, and we hope it will end as soon as possible. Listen to what you get from O'Reilly.
These pinheads running around going, "Get out of Iraq now," don't know what they're talking about. Right. These are the same people before Hitler invaded in World War II that were saying, "Oh, he's not such a bad guy." They don't get it.
Now, see, if I make a comparison to, say, 9/11 and the Reichstag fire, he's calling the Republicans Nazis. He's a hater.
This is a conversation you and I have had time and time again. And if someone is offended, then you need to look in your heart, because change your party. It doesn't matter what party you go to. Change your party if you're not happy. If you disagree, call in. But throughout this, the right side, and I'm not talking about everyone on the right side, but a lot of the people have been nasty, belligerent, hateful. All you have to do is go by the message boards. And Bob and I have had disagreements over that. If you want to disagree on politics, that's fine. If you personally attack someone else, you will be banned. That is the fact of the matter. And if the people are offended by what they hear when you say Republicans, I don't call them Republicans. I call them Republicans because I know some Republicans that doesn't feel that the war in Iraq is right. But if you feel offended, then you need to look deep in your heart and realize there's something there that's just not right.
Well, and that's the quest, that's the $64 question, Agnes. If I say something and it offends someone, if I say Republican and those people are offended, it's not my job to search their hearts. Now, just as with the soundbite from Randy Duke Cunningham talking about, "I know I will lose all my material goods," it was one of the first things he mentioned, and then he finally got around to saying, "And I've lost the trust of my friends and family." What mattered first, what he was, and you're the one who said it to me as we were cutting the soundbites. You said he is not crying because he regrets what he did. He is crying because he got caught. And these people who are turned off by me, perhaps in engaging in more vitriol than some might like. Well, are they angry because? Well, I'll put it simply. I believe they are angry because they recognize that what I speak is factual and true. They are participants in slaughter. Everyone, and it's just a fact. George Bush started this war. George Bush went into office. We know now from the former Secretary of the Treasury. We know from Richard Clark. The list is almost endless. We know that he went into office in January 2001 with the plan for the war against Iraq already fully formed. And then had the nerve to sit there and look America in the eye and say,
War should be the last option. When that option had already long been eliminated, all you have to do is read the Downing Street minutes and the Downing Street memos, and you understand what that man was about. So everyone who voted, and I mean everyone who voted for George Bush, is complicit in the horror and the massacre and the murder that has been perpetrated in all of our names. And I offer no expiation for what they did until such time as they are free enough and honest enough and straight up enough to stand up and say, I did it, I regret it, and please, please, in the sweet name of Jesus, forgive me for it. Because contrition is preceded, or rather, forgiveness is preceded by contrition. And there is no Republican contrition. They want it to go on the way it has been. And the people who enable them are no different than the drug dealer who sells another little bag of heroin to the junkie. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. When Republicans use terms like judicial activism and original intent, they're trying to convey the message that they're all for the Constitution as it was originally written, and that judges don't have the right to interpret the law except for how it might have been viewed in the days when the country was founded. But if the Founding Fathers never wanted things to change, you'd think they would have said so at the time, or at least written the Constitution that way. The fact that there are allowments for amending the Constitution written within it would seem to speak clearly about their attitude towards the future. They created a living document that was sturdy enough to withstand the frivolous nature of the general public, yet flexible enough to bend as the needs of the nation changed with the times. As always, then, what the Republicans really mean is something entirely different from what they say they mean. The truth is that they want a Constitution that favors the privileged few at the expense of everyone else. The laws they want to change are the laws that protect the rights of working people and minorities, and the Bush administration has packed the lower courts with judges that consistently side with the rich and powerful over everyone else. The Founding Fathers understood clearly who was in charge and who had the ultimate authority. They made it clear at the very beginning of the document, in words larger than all the rest, what their original intent was when they wrote it. We, the people. It's time we remembered that. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
August 9th, 1999. I was raped. I felt dirty. And I lost Social Security. Victim assistant helped me with counseling. They helped me write a victim impact statement. And because of that, my rapist got 20 years. With the right help, you can move on with your life.
She smiles. www.crimevictims.gov.
I love it when my president tells me to put food on my family. I just, you know, when he tells me to do that, I immediately, you know, we start having a food fight. So,
do you really?
It's great.
Do you and your kids start throwing like Twinkies and stuff at each other?
No, more like, you know, mashed potatoes and stuff.
Oh, right,
stuff
right.
Sticks,
hold on.
Sticks
oh, right
to the
on.
Wall, you know. But anyway, you know, and that should be a top story all by itself. You know? How did we elect such a moron?
We try to answer that and many more questions this week and last week on Fourth Estate Radio. I'm John Fox, one of your co-hosts. Bruce Birch will join me on Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, every week to try and strip the pants off the mainstream media. That's FourthEstateRadio.com. We'll be right back.
tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, I'm gonna put some of this to rest because there's other things to expend our energies on. But I got an email from another FOB friend of Bob. Bob in Boston writes, and he sent me a link to an article that I had not seen, and just in one way I'm amazed, and in another I'm not at all. Duke Cunningham, and maybe I'm overworking the issue, but I should rather overwork it than to leave any part of it underworked. Because there were people who heard him bawling a couple of days ago and somehow managed to work up some sympathy for a man who took $2.5 million in bribes. I've referenced it before. I don't know if it's true or not, but there's a line in the movie version of The Untouchables where Kevin Costner in the Elliot Ness role is offered a bribe. And he claims, he's got a line where he claims that in the days of ancient Rome, a person caught, a government official caught taking bribes would be put in a sack with a hungry wolf. The sack would be tied off and the two would be thrown into the Tiber River. And where bribery is concerned, I got no problem with that. You know, when in this nation, when we engage in capital punishment of people who are mentally retarded, until it was stopped a year or so ago, a nation that is willing to execute the mentally retarded, I would think would be willing to take a little bit more seriously notions of public corruption. We have Byzantine laws about who can accept what in the way of political donations for a reason. They need to be Byzantine so that people who are otherwise corrupt can't get caught. I'd be in favor of a very simple federal statute that says no member of Congress, no president, no member of the judiciary may accept any form of gift whatsoever from any outside source. Wouldn't take long to write that law now, would it? And it's pretty clear what the intent would be and what the meaning would be. Of course, if you pass that law, some Republican member of Congress and probably a few Democrats too would challenge it on constitutional grounds or some such, or questions about the true meaning of the words shall accept. You know how it goes. But Randy Duke Cunningham is a violent soul. Like I said in discussing the matter with Peter, David Obey was challenged to a fist fight. The quote from Cunningham, "I do not like to be threatened," and this was about having some legislation challenged, "I do not like to be threatened, and if the individual," speaking to Congressman Obey, "wants to threaten, we can handle that real good. If the gentleman wants to do something, he can just come right over here." Then in 1995, U.S. Capitol Police had to break up a scuffle between Cunningham and Congressman James Moran, a Democrat from Virginia. There's a pattern here. He was quoted in the San Diego Union-Tribune in 1994 in May regarding a speech that he made in Washington. This is a quote. "I have flown an F-14 over this Capitol with a 20-millimeter gun that could shoot 6,000 rounds a minute. I could disintegrate this hall in a half a second burst." And then again, in 2004, before a U.S. history class, "I've flown an airplane over this city," talking then about Encinitas, California, With a 20-millimeter Gatling gun, I could have disintegrated this whole school in half a second. I've never committed a crime with a weapon. I support people like myself with the right to bear arms that are legal. And let's, you know, let's go ahead and pile on just a little bit, because I'm in a piling on kind of mood when it comes to a filthy human being like Randy Duke Cunningham. You remember the Tailhook scandal? Where a number of different members of the military engaged in rape? Well, he gave an interview to KNSD-TV in February 1994. And in reference to the victim in that gang rape, he said, "Was Paula Coughlin totally innocent in this Tailhook scandal? I don't think so. If you have clothes that are scant, if you have a past that is not professional, then that's going to add to the problems." You've heard it all before, and it always comes from the same kind of people. Well, she asked for it. Mighty Butch isn't Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham. Mighty Butch. Well, Bob in Boston sent me this article from July 4th, 2003, the Washington Blade. It's a gay newspaper, or a newspaper geared toward gay issues. And I'm just going to share a little bit of it with you. It began as a remarkable vignette about a virulently anti-gay congressman who reached out in private to gay activists with questions about how people know if they are gay. But last month, retold before an audience of nearly 200 at a Gay Pride town hall meeting, a remembered encounter from 8 years ago has raised questions about whether the leader of this country's largest gay rights organization has on several occasions effectively outed a member of Congress. Now, this is a lady named Elizabeth Birch. She was on a panel discussing whether or not there's a gay agenda. Elizabeth Birch was director at the time of the Human Rights Campaign, and she said she had an unusual conversation with a Republican congressman who opposes gay rights. Birch said the congressman startled her when he ushered his staff members out of his Capitol Hill office, closed the door, and asked Birch and Daniel Zingale, then Human Rights Campaign's political director, just how it was that they came to know that they are gay. The way Birch quoted the congressman was, "You know, how do you know you're that way?" In hushed tones, Birch told the audience that the congressman leaned back against his desk and revealed that he was asking the question because he had, quote, loved men in the past. Now, here's what Birch told the audience. Quote, "This guy's got 3 tours in Vietnam, and there were lots of guns on the wall, whips and stuff like that. I looked at Daniel, and I went, oh, my God. Oh, no, he didn't." Birch described how she and Zingale told the congressman how they and other gay people struggle with their own feelings until they come to terms with who they are and affirm to themselves that they're gay. And finally, he said, quote, "Because I've loved men," Birch recalled the congressman saying, quote, "And I said, was that in a military setting?" Again, the audience laughed, acknowledging how awkward the conversation was for Birch and Zingale. He said, "Yes." He said, "Yes, indeed, on the field of battle. But I've also loved men." I want to go back to this these remarks on the floor of the House of Representatives just one more time, if you don't mind, Agnes. We'll get to it in a second. There's a reason for this. I want you to hear these remarks because they're going to be critical and crucial.
Same people that would vote to cut defense $177 billion, the same ones that would put homos in the military, the same ones that would not fund BRAC, the same
Mr.
ones
Chairman,
that would not clear up.
Mr.
No,
Chairman.
I will not. Sit down, you socialist.
Okay. The same ones who would put homos in the military. This from the news item. Birch did not identify the congressman, but said the meeting took place a short time after the congressman created a controversy in 1995 when he referred to gays as homos on the floor of the House of Representatives. By the way, that was the woman who said, "Mr. Chairman, sit down, you socialist." That was Patricia Schroeder, former vice presidential candidate. This is Randy Duke Cunningham. And all the butch posturing somehow suddenly just makes sense. I don't care what someone's sexual orientation is. As long as there's consent between adults involved, none of it goes back to what Mama said. Boy, mind your own business. A lot of people don't want to do that, though. Let's take a quick break. And more of your phone calls when we come back. The phone number, of course, 877-443-2366. That's 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm just a kid.
I'm 6.
I'm 9.
I'm 4.5.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Roof fall accidents have declined significantly in recent years, but they still continue to claim the lives of too many working miners. Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. No miner has to die from a roof fall accident. Miners and mine operators can take steps to reduce the likelihood of these tragic accidents in underground mines. Always follow the approved roof control plan for your mining operation. Make required roof examinations before starting work. Look at the roof closely, listen, and sound it out. Install additional roof support when you encounter adverse roof conditions. Always use maximum supervision and oversight when performing retreat mining operations. Never, ever walk or travel under unsupported roof. Make the right decision. Focus more attention on roof control in underground mines. Thank you for listening.
So, which one's yours?
The one at bat.
Strike two.
Oh, that's okay, Chris. Only my kid could strike out in T-ball. Oh, run, Chris, go!
Looks like he's having some trouble running.
Oh, he's wandering way off the baseline.
It's like he can't see.
Oh, my gosh, his helmet is too big.
It's as big as a bucket.
You know, I must have gotten him an adult one. What was I thinking?
You're out.
Oh.
When safety equipment doesn't fit, it's game over. That goes for your kids, too. If they're too big for a car seat, that doesn't mean they're the right size for an adult safety belt. If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat. It raises them up so the safety belt fits properly. And the right fit makes all the difference to their future. To learn more, visit www.boosterseat.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Love to you was never second best.
have a twisted, twisted sense of humor, Agnes. 20 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones. Chris is with us. Hey, Chris, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm guessing you went to DukeCunningham.org.
No.
Oh, it has sound bites.
Oh, really? More than what I had?
I haven't listened to them yet, but I'm sure. I'm on the quotes right now.
No, oh, yeah, he's one of those quote a minute kind of guys.
Your son is dead meats at Duke Cunningham and other Republicans who taunted
yep.
Representative Nick Smith after he voted against new prescription drug benefits and refused a $100,000 bribe. Cross that out. Donation to his son Brad's congressional campaign.
Yeah, November 22nd, 2003.
Yeah, and you know who was? You saw who wrote the article, right?
No.
Bob Novak.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's the next, the unseen hand having writ moves on.
Ah.
Oh, he's a piece of work. The whole, you know, the business of, I love the quote from Barney Frank after he said that the only person who could enjoy having prostate cancer was Barney Frank. What he came back with. He said, Cunningham's, quote, not a guy who's taken all that seriously. He does not have a high reputation for the thoughtful and analytical content of his remarks. Then he said, he seems to be more interested in discussing homosexuality than most homosexuals. Well, now we know why, don't we?
Yeah.
And see, again, I don't care what somebody's sexual orientation is, but I do have a problem with somebody who is, well, the first thing that comes to mind are those people in the German death camps who cooperated with the Germans in helping kill their fellow man, even though they, too, were slated for execution. I forget what the word was for those kind of people. That's Duke Cunningham.
Duke Cunningham brings up the old line from Shakespeare, methinks he does protest too much.
Yeah, and get thee to a nunnery while we're at it.
Yeah, they got better pudding. Well, you know, he's going to get $36,000
a year. Huh?
Yep. He's going to be able to draw $36,000
a year. Pension? Wait, when you're a congressman and you take bribes, you don't forfeit your pension?
No, this is from the Navy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
And that's money we're paying.
Yeah.
Charming.
We're going to pay this. You know, it's funny that his nickname is Duke.
Well, last night on The Daily Show, I think it was, Jon Stewart said there's a trend among Republican convicts to be pre-nicknamed for easy prison love. Scooter Libby, Duke Cunningham, and Stewart remarked, well, of course, the difference being that Duke has been pre-nicknamed as a top.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, I was thinking about Louisiana, where the guy was actually named Duke.
Oh, David.
David, yeah.
David, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, it's up to Governor Schwarzenegger. That just makes my skin crawl when I have to say that. It's up to him to call for a special election to replace him.
Oh, so there's not a, will there be, I mean, is there no appointment or anything? I mean, he'd have to run
he couldn't appoint him. They found out he couldn't appoint him. They have so long to call a special election to remove him, I mean, to replace him.
Yeah, because he's already resigned.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he retired a while back.
Well, he said he wasn't going to run again. He said that in June.
Yeah. Okay.
Wonder how much the yacht will go for.
I wonder how much he'll get to go around and speak.
Well, that's one of the things that drives me crazy, Chris. He's only facing 10 years in prison for this.
There's lots of little diners in Idaho. He could, you know, just... In North Dakota, South Dakota.
He could go and tell them about having his 20 millimeter Gatling gun and how he could shoot up the diner in just a second.
Yeah.
He's a sicko.
You want them oven fries? I'll make them oven fries.
Yeah, he does. No, but I mean, he doesn't. We need to make it clear. This man is not deserving of the sympathy of any sort of decent human being.
Well, you know, everybody always talks about, you know, Democrats, they don't know what they think one way or the other. They don't know. Well, and I heard somebody on television the other night saying, well, you know, Republicans. Yeah, it was Michael Moore was on C-SPAN yesterday. He was talking about what do Democrats stand for, and it was real quiet. He said, you know exactly what Republicans stand for because they had their talk voice and they stick to it. Well, it's obvious we know what they stand for. Because 9 times out of 10, 9.5 times out of 10, when one of these idiots blows up, it's something like this.
Sure. We know what
station it's.
Well, but I'm a Democrat, and I darn well know what I stand for. And one of the things I stand for is people not taking $2.5 million bribes to make life better for a defense contractor.
I'm not a Democrat. I can't claim to the party anymore.
Well, I'm gonna.
I left that a while back.
Yeah, but I got
but
nowhere else.
Between one or the other, yeah.
I got nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
There's no. I can work. And like-minded folks can work to bring the Democratic Party back to its roots. There's no saving the Republican Party.
No, they're
dead and done with. Sold their soul to the devil. You know, can't get up in the daylight. You know.
But there are good people there. That's what Michael Moore said. There are good. There are people over there that are actually halfway decent people. And you wonder how in the world that you know, the thing about the Reader last night that they seized and they were going to have to reprint.
Yeah.
Well, Kerry brought home a thing with the Weekly Reader today. It had Judge Alito on the cover. They talked about the Supreme Court and how...
Wait a minute. Wait.
Yeah.
Sammy Bad Breath was on the cover of my Weekly Reader?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Weekly Reader, and inside there's a story about the Supreme Court. And it still has Harriet Meyer's hopes to be appointed, so it's out of date. But Kerry was asking me about Alito, and I explained to him about him. She says, well, we don't need him. I said, honey, it's too late. She asked me about Harriet Meyer, so I told her about him. About, well,
her.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
In a Dobson kind of way. And she said, well, that don't sound good. And I know Jeff and L, then we're going to go, well, see, teaching his daughter again. Listen, Jeff, you wrote about my daughter once. I really wouldn't do it again.
Good enough. A word to the wise is sufficient. But, my God, you had my Weekly Reader when you were in elementary school, didn't you?
Yeah.
We didn't have right-wing Supreme Court nominees on the cover.
We didn't have anything politically current.
No, my God, my Weekly Reader had, you know, a picture of a butterfly coming out of a cocoon, or Thomas Jefferson, or a panda. They didn't have Sammy Bad Breath.
I mean, that is agenda there. That is nothing but agenda. That is.
Well, if you get the children, or
ago, 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah.
No, that I don't think that new.
No, but if you get the children young enough. That's how it works.
Well, that don't work with my little girl because she watches the news. She listens to what these people say, and she just sits and shakes her head.
Well, it doesn't work here either because our kids are constantly questioning, you know, what's this about? Explain it to me, Mommy. Explain it to me, Daddy. And we do.
She came in the living room the other night and said, Daddy, can you look up the equation for EMC equals,
E equals MC squared.
Yeah, And I looked up at it. She said, no, the real equation.
Oh, dear.
I was like, honey.
The skull sweat behind it.
I don't know if they have that something that long. But, you know, she's a very free thinker. That's what we've raised her to be. We talked to her as an adult, and we treated her like a person. So naturally, she can think for herself. My God, we really screwed up.
Well, look, you know, the great state of Alabama needs every one of those that they can get their hands on.
Boy, do they.
I mean, there's a few of them. There's a over on Democratic Underground, there's a good number of good liberal Alabamians. But, you know, they are diamonds in the dung. And you know, that's the way it is with progressives in a lot of the red states.
Yeah, we were watching a dung beetle on Animal Planet the other day, and that's what I thought about Democrats in this state or in the South. You know, we're pushing up a hill, and
yeah,
we just had some more help.
Just trying to drag the Deep South, kicking and screaming, into the 19th century.
Yeah, I mean, we could be Egyptians, or we could be picking cotton. It wouldn't matter.
Hey, Chris, we got to hit the break. Always good to hear from you, man.
Take care, my man.
Later. And yeah, that's the thing with this bunch. You're never done. The war is never over. I have living proof of it when we come back. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
No. support our troops. We hear it practically every day. We read it in the papers, in yard signs, on bumper stickers. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. For more than 60 years, the USO has tirelessly maintained a bridge back home for our soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, and Coast Guardsmen around the world who fight to preserve the freedoms we hold so dear. The USO receives no government funding. It employs only private citizens and volunteers and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people to fulfill its mission. Help us support our troops. To find out more about the USO and how you can help, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at uso.org.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Okay, let's take it downhill. One last little bit of outrage before we close off this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On. And this might speak to, it's going to speak to the environmentalists. An environmentalist sent this to me. Our good friend Judy down at Coal River Mountain Watch sent me this alert. But it might speak to healthcare professionals, people who deal with children when they're ill. Do you remember Project Cheer? Talked about it at some length a year or so ago. This was the project that was going to be run in Duval County, Florida, where parents of little, poor, often minority children were going to be paid money, given a T-shirt and a video camera for allowing pesticides, poisons to be tested on their children. Remember that one? There was a lot of hell raised over that. And it was beaten back because Congress, my God, Congress actually did something on this. There are Republicans out there who managed to get rather upset about the idea of poisoning little American children. It was kind of amazing. And the Congress said EPA shall not permit any form of poison or pesticide testing on pregnant mothers or children. Now, I said earlier how if you crafted a very simple law that said congressmen cannot take gifts from any outside sources, what does that mean? What's outside source mean? What does gift mean? This is an example of that. Okay? This is an example of that. The EPA is presently in a public comment period, and I'm going to go ahead and give you the email address, and it's you'll have to get a pencil out if you want. If you can't, if you lose it, email me. I'll send it to you. The email address is op-docket@epa.gov. Now, in order for your comment to matter to them, in the subject line, it's going to have to read, "Attention, docket ID number OPP-2003-0132. Okay? This alert was dated today, November 30th, 2005. Public comments now being accepted by the Environmental Protection Agency on its newly proposed federal regulation regarding the testing of chemicals and pesticides on human subjects. Now, on August 2nd, 2005, Congress did in fact mandate that the EPA create a rule that permanently bans chemical testing on pregnant women and children without exception. You know, no gray areas. Don't do it. But the EPA's newly proposed rule is ridden with exceptions where the chemical studies may be performed on children in certain situations like the following. 1. Children who, quote, cannot be reasonably consulted. Yeah, I just want to turn the mic off and let that one stew for a couple of minutes. Such as those that are, wait for it, mentally handicapped. Or orphaned newborns. This is the Bush administration's idea of being pro-life. Running around the room yet? With permission from the institution or guardian in charge of the individual, the child may be exposed to chemicals for the sake of research. Parental consent forms are not necessary for testing on children who have been neglected or abused. And chemical studies on any children outside of the United States are acceptable. Got it? Got it? See, this is why I saved it for last. oh dear, Agnes's foot is vibrating. There's trouble afoot. See, foot's vibrating, trouble afoot. See how it works. Yeah, you're number one in my book, too, dear. Children who cannot be reasonably consulted.
Okay, PETA people, let's hear you. You're worried about the animals? What about the kids?
Eh, never mind. No, I hope you, if like I said, if you want that email address, let me know. I'll share it with you. We beat this one back once. Looks like we're going to have to do it again because the chemical industry just isn't happy unless they're tested. What are they testing? Kidicide? Not pesticide. Well, pesticide. You get the... Oh, my God. What kind of sick monster sits in an office somewhere in the Environmental Protection Agency, for God's sakes? This is supposed to be the stuff they're fighting against. But not when it's the Bush administration, and not when it's staffed and run by people from the poison industry. Dear God, let's go to the phone before my head explodes. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, your head on.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I don't know.
Well, I don't know either after that last comment. I just came in. I haven't listened to the whole show, and I'm not really prepared to comment on that except to say, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But I just caught the end of Chris, and since Chris mentioned him, I will mention him. Jeff?
Yeah.
I just got a call from Robert Byrd.
Yeah.
And he was telling me how much better he feels now that Jeff isn't going to run against him for the Senate.
I caught that, too.
Yeah, well, I had to listen to that show this morning because I had to hear what they were going to say about the nurses.
Right.
You know, and stuff like that. Jeff came on, and I don't know. At first, he announced he was going to run against Robert Byrd. Then later on the show, he called back in and
changed his mind.
Robert Byrd just called me a little bit ago and told me how...
Yeah, he's feeling a lot better now?
Yeah. You know, because...
He can sleep at night.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was a major concern.
Well, God forbid that superior intellect should be brought to bear against the likes of Robert Byrd.
Exactly. And the experience.
Oh, God, we're being mean again. We're talking, and by the way, just as a backgrounder, we're talking here about some of the shenanigans that go on at the message boards at headonradio.com. Free for the enjoying. Anybody wants to, jump on in there and have a blast.
Oh, them and the guys are calling me Union Thug Wayne?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. He's wrong, because my half, I'm banning the little people that are doing nasty things. If they can't be nice and talk about the subject, then they don't get to be there.
She's been watching Bambi again, Wayne. You know, that whole, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
Yeah.
I got to keep her off Bambi.
Anyway, I'm going to have to listen to... the archives, I guess, to hear what went
on. It's, well, we've had a lot of fun with Duke Cunningham tonight. We found out even more about this man to make it, you know, the guy that took all the bribes, the $2.5 million, took the yacht and the Rolls and the house and all that. There's plenty out there for hating, for really, really not liking Duke Cunningham, and we've just sort of explored that.
You know, I keep thinking about that now. He's from California?
Yeah, apparently the San Diego area.
Okay. Wouldn't you... I mean, not knowing anything about the guy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you kind of question if, you know, this guy got elected to office, da, 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 and I'm sure, you know, a lot of the reason he got elected because he was a war hero and all that jazz at that time. But if all of a sudden he started driving a Rolls Royce,
Wouldn't you
go, wow.
Well, if all of a sudden he had a yacht moored on the banks of the Potomac in D.C. where he lived.
Oh, okay, yeah.
On a $166,000 a year salary and a $30,000 a year military pension.
I would question that. Yeah. You know, where did he get that yacht?
Yeah, I mean, one day there's a yacht. Hey, Duke, where'd you get that? Found it.
And, you know, I don't know. I mean, the answer could be that...
Duke gave it to me in the alley.
His father was Duke Wayne and left him a lot of money or something. I mean, that's where he got... then he'd go, oh, yeah, no wonder he could afford that yacht. But you could probably find out pretty quick that John Wayne wasn't his father, and he didn't leave him a lot of money.
No, but, you know, when you're one of those purse strings holders in Congress, I guess the temptation to succumb to bribery is great. And it's amazing the number of people who don't, but I got no sympathy for the ones who do.
None at all. None at all. That's, you know.
I mean, this is a guy who once said that people who protested the Vietnam War should be taken out and shot.
He said that?
Yeah, he said that. Well, you missed some of it.
Wasn't he in Vietnam to fight for the freedom for the people to say that?
No, he wanted them shot.
Okay.
Well, he screamed across the House of Representatives at Patricia Schroeder, "Sit down, you socialist."
Ooh.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
That's almost a communist, right?
Right.
Or
yeah, not quite as red as a communist, but you know, at least substantially pink.
Well, I'm proud to say I've been called all those things.
Yeah, right. It's a badge of honor to be called that by a bunch of knuckle walkers and mouth breathers.
You get called that if you stand up for working people, you know.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. You get socialist communist.
Well, you get called that if you suggest that a sick person should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick.
Yeah.
Communism.
But anytime I get called that, I figure, boy, I'm really doing my job good.
Yeah, you're ahead of the game.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, what is there? Is there any more on the front from the nurses?
You know that. Well, they were on the front page of the paper. Been on that. Well, they were a big discussion in that morning show, and Bill Riggs, you know, who's head of the Kentucky West Virginia Nurses Association,
right,
has been on the news on that other radio station, and he was on. I think it was on Channel 59. 11,
mm-hmm.
Whatever it is,
yeah.
Tonight. So they're getting pretty good coverage, and you know.
Well, I hope people just understand this isn't a bunch of disaffected nurses deciding they're not making enough money, because you know, usually.
No, it isn't.
That's usually the way things get painted.
Right. These are, you know, these people have a contract. They signed a contract just a year ago.
Yeah,
and their contract is they work 3 12s, 36 hours. They get paid for 40. That's the contract they signed. They're willing to honor their contract. The other side apparently is not.
The other side's having a bad case of Terrell Owens syndrome, I guess.
Yes, they are.
I want to renegotiate the contract right now.
Right now. But wait a minute. You just signed a contract. You know, no honor.
No.
But no honor.
Sleazy.
No.
I mean, we can say sleazy, can't we?
Sure we could say.
I mean, trying to breach a contract that's barely a year old, that's sleazy.
Listen, well, I think I said it last time. I mean, these are the same people that, you know, when they did the little demonstration, filed a unfair labor practice against them, and the first thing they did in their unfair labor practice is lie. Said that they did this demonstration on hospital property, which was an out-and-out lie, you know. Then they wonder why they lost.
Why would this hospital come down with something like this at Christmas, for God's sake?
It's your fault.
It's
They're mad at you.
Oh, got it. Okay. Sorry. Forgot.
You know, it's. I mean, you know, you got big shoulders.
Yeah, I filed that away on the wrong brain cell. Yeah, but yeah, exactly. It's my fault.
Hey, I'm proud of you. I don't know what to do.
We aims to please, Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't come down to this. But these people. Well, hasn't some? Have they started bringing in the strike breakers yet?
No. Yeah, but I expect that'll be well. Nobody wants, you know, listen, these people don't want to go on strike. Nobody wants to go on strike.
Who wants to be on strike at all, let alone at Christmas?
Exactly. You know, but
I'm
they
guessing
will stand up. Well, I've met with them. You know, these people are very strong in what, I mean, they are mad. They're mad because, you know, they negotiated and they signed a contract and they figure, okay, we could relax for, you know, next 3 years. Let's just go to work. Let's take care of our patients, you know. Everything's okay. And then a year later, here comes ARH with this crap.
Appalachian Regional Hospital.
Exactly,
yeah.
Appalachian Regional Hospital. And that's exactly what it is. It's crap, you know. And I want to, you know, anybody who listens, these are hospitals that were started, funded, and owned by the United Mine Workers.
Right.
By union people that put up their money to provide health care for their people. They consequently, you know, John L. Lewis came and dedicated this hospital in Beckley.
Yeah, what, in the early 50s, was it?
I believe it was.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact date, you know. And without the United Mine Workers, you know, there wouldn't be that hospital.
Right.
Or the one in Hinton. Or the
Now, it's not the, but let's be clear about something.
The United Mine Workers no longer own it.
Right.
Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the UMW that's being nasty to the nurses.
No. It, well, it is not them, but they surely support that. You know, when I came here about 13 years ago, that's the first thing I was told was that's the hospital you go to.
Yeah.
That's, you know, because it was a union hospital. They will take care of you. I wouldn't go to that hospital if my life depended on it. I mean, with these idiots running it. You know.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about the staff. We're not talking about the nurses.
Not at all. They're you know, good people. Understaffed they are, but, you know, they're very, very good, honorable people. And if, you know, if ARH decides to bring this thing to a head, they're going to regret that. You know, there will be a lot of people behind these nurses.
I believe so.
Well, there already are. You know, I mean, this is just absolutely, it's ludicrous what they're doing, you know. And in my mind, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with money. This is union busting.
That's what
people are engaged in.
It's about the sleaziest, slimiest, most hateful form of labor tactic that exists.
That's exactly what it is.
You know, the freedom of association is a central part of the First Amendment, Wayne. You know that, and so do I. Everybody else does too. And when you get right down to it, this is an attack on the freedom of these nurses to form their association.
That's exactly what it is.
Because the association is the one that negotiated the agreement.
Yes, they did.
Well, you know,
and ARH agreed to.
Signed off.
Signed.
Sure.
You know, and now, well, like I said last night, the only one that has to supposedly to honor the agreement is the workers, not manager. You know, it doesn't. Well. I think they'll rule the day that they did this one. Yeah, I certainly hope so, because these nurses are determined. They're mad, and if they think this strike vote is a joke, well, they should think again, because it's not. They are prepared to go. They don't want to, but they will. You know, and they have to.
Well, they've been pinned into a corner.
Yes, they have, and that's not a good thing to do to anything.
No, and but you know, once you're in that corner, you either fight your way out of it, or you let them do what they will.
Right, and there's no, and you know the choice. You know what these people have chose to fight, and I will be with them 100%, and so will a lot of other people.
Well, I'll, little old me, little old Agnes, will be there.
And you know, if I don't know if ARH realizes it or not, but in Raleigh County alone, there are 5,000 retired United Mine workers. And for every one of those United Mine workers that are retired, there are, I don't know,
family members.
10 wives, husbands, brothers, sisters, nieces,
aunts, uncles, cousins.
Yeah, the whole nine yards. And, well, they ought to rethink this, and I think they will.
Well, I hope they do. I hope they come to their senses.
I do, too. I do, too. And if they don't, these people are prepared to bring them to their senses.
Well, good. Christmas. I just keep coming back to that. They're doing this at Christmas.
I know.
What? I mean, this is from the Ebenezer Scrooge School of Management. And of course,
that's, yeah, it is.
And that's part of it, Wayne, though. That's part of it. They thought if they pulled this at Christmas that they would have some form of leverage over these nurses and make them more willing to bow down and kiss the ring.
Right.
Because you don't want to, you know, you don't want this going down at the holiday season. You want to make sure your kids have their presents. You want to make sure that Christmas dinner is on the table.
Yes, you do.
And again, it goes back to union busting. Because if you can get two or three members of the union talking that way, then you can break the will. Oh, this was very cynically and very strategically done.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And you know, a lot of this, and, you know, I mean, I kid that, you know, it's all your fault.
Yeah, it's a weaselly thing to do. There,
right.
I said it.
Right. But, you know, these people are mad about what happened. You know, that, Jesus.
Yeah, and folks should understand, you know, we've got a broad audience outside of the confines of southern West Virginia. Just because you're not here doesn't mean you can't pick up the phone or Google up Beckley Appalachian Regional Hospital or any other Appalachian Regional Hospital facility. You can Google up the phone number and you can call and leave a message for the corporate suits, right?
You can, and I encourage people to do that. You know, I mean, this. Let me see. This show goes to the world.
Yeah,
That's a pretty big place, isn't it?
Yeah, last I checked.
Yeah, me too.
Well, maybe that'll happen.
It's not in real good shape, but it's a big place.
Yeah. All right, man, you take it easy, all right?
All right, brother.
Have a good one.
All right, man, bye.
Bye now. Okay, and let's see. And we've got Paul. Hey, Paul, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Doing good. Yourself?
I can't complain. Looking forward to being down in your area soon.
Oh, well, we look forward to it, too.
But I was just calling in. I still don't have internet access, but I've had some friends lately who've been asking for the streaming audio address, and I was wondering if you could have a chance to give it out.
Hey, thank you for the promotional opportunity. I appreciate it. There's two. The simple way is just to go to headonradio.com.
Okay.
And on that front page, just click on air.
Right.
And that will take you to the link site at whiterosesociety.org.
Okie dokie.
Then that's whiterosesociety.org/Kincaid, K-I-N-C-A-I-D, .html.
And that's also where you can get the...
archives.
The archives. That's,
right.
That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to having internet access as well sometime soon and being able to parlay... on topic with you.
Well, we've missed
right now. I have no idea what you're talking about.
well, that's okay. Most of a lot of the people listening think that that's just par for the course.
Par for the course.
Yeah.
All right.
But we're at the end of things. But thanks for the opportunity to get for me to remind me to get the little plug out there.
It's my pleasure to be of service.
All right. Take care.
All right. You too.
Later.
Bye.
All right. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes.